Hi, this is Mary Wilson on September 29th, 2020, interviewing Jake Maxwell, pastor of Second Baptist in Lubbock. And Jake, I want to start off by thanking you for being here and agreeing to be a part of this. I'm pretty excited about our conversation today.
So, that's generous. You're thanking me and excited now. Let's see how poorly I perform.
Right. So one of the questions that I have at some point ask everyone that I've been interviewing is something along the lines of tell me your story, but in a way that is one highlights, I guess, formative events in your life that have brought you to where you are today.
Yeah. my parents are, you know, neat people and broken people just like me. Mom is a Yankee hippie who made her way to Texas, and dad is a Dallas, you know, working poor sort of turned hippie, and they met, and mom was raised sort of Roman Catholic. Dad was raised very Southern Baptist, and I have two brothers, and my parents, you know, worked really hard, you know, to build a family, and we have had a wonderful childhood, and unfortunately, their marriage didn't last, and however, the spirituality kind of that they both, you know, particularly after they divorced, we'd go to Mass with Mom and go to church with Dad, and we were baptized as infants in the room, you know, in the parish there, and we were confirmed as Baptists later. But you know, really after my parents divorced, kind of those nuances became more accentuated, and you know, I think the divorce got really nasty on a number of levels, and you know, it was a source of shame, I think, for a lot of us, just kind of in how embarrassing some of this stuff was. But you know, in the long run, it was also just kind of like it was a source of learning. And my brothers and I are real close, and I think we're very close, and I think in part because of what we went through together.
Yeah. How old were you?
I was like 10, 12, maybe. It took a long time because of just like conflict and that just, you know, compounds on itself, whatever. But you know, my brothers both kind of like walked away from organized religion during that time and have stayed away from organized religion. You know, I kind of like doubled down on the youth group, but over time, just kind of you know, felt this interest in spirituality, and in particularly, it was probably sort of towards the end of college or even in graduate school where I discovered that I think it was contemplative tradition, really, that and I didn't even know that term then, but like it was the quiet practices that really, like, it was meditation, right? You know, like I was told so long, read your Bible and pray, but it was like years later I learned that this thing that was so interesting in me was really this resonance with the quiet, or even with like experience, you know, sometimes climbing a mountain, but most often it's just like, it was cold and it was early and it was dark and I was having a cup of coffee, you know, and I was outside. Later that became those sort of experiences became a practice, right? A contemplative or a meditation practice, yoga even practice. But that's kind of how I want. So now I find myself in this kind of like, quote unquote progressive or quote unquote liturgical Baptist tradition. And sometimes I just laugh because, you know, some of our Baptist friends say we look Catholic, and I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, that's exactly where I would land, you know, is in a Baptist Catholic sort of setting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It kind of like all feels full circle sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what was it about the youth group that you found, I guess, so appealing that helped you dive into that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I had a youth minister who skateboarded and looked like Vanilla Ice and rapped like Vanilla Ice, you know, in a time where that was like just perfect, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he was real present to me in those years just post divorce. And he just kind of, so, you know, for a little while there, I thought, oh, I just want to be like him. And then I realized I don't want to have anything to do with youth ministry. That just took years to kind of figure out. But but he was just a person who was present to me. And I guess maybe just kind of embodied for me, like the ministry of presence.
Right, right. How do you find that to play out in your ministry today?
Yeah, I mean, it really doesn't matter what I say.
It's nobody's listening.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're listening. You know, every week after a sermon, someone will say something to me, and my hunch is probably this happened to you too. So my hunch is I'm not special in this regard.
Yeah.
But someone will say to me something like, "Hey, when you said this in your sermon, that was really incredible. That was really meaningful to me." And I'm just sitting there shaking my head. And I'm also thinking, I didn't say anything like that. You know, but it doesn't matter what I say, you know, it's so much bigger and deeper. And, you know, everyone is sitting in there with their thing and they walked in with all this stress or all this expectation or all this distraction. And it's like, it's wild and it's really kind of beautiful and it's strange.
So, yeah.
For the most part, it doesn't matter what I say. There, you know, 5% of the people really, you know, take the words and analyze the words and then probably show me later how I was wrong in what I said.
I suspect people listen to you more than you give yourself credit for. But
yeah.
So what brought you to ministry? How did you become a pastor?
Oh man. I guess I just, you know, I went to school in college to study, you know, ministry, to study theology.
Oh, okay.
And you know, to be a youth minister. And probably either the way that it was taught to me, or most likely the way that I received it, right, was faith was an argument to be won. So structure a good argument.
Yeah.
And I've just found myself over the years thinking, I don't want to argue to youth, you know, as to why faith is a good idea. Also, I can't do that. I'm like, I'm not built for rhetoric or defending, you know, apologetics or whatever. So like, you know, it took a while to realize I don't want anything to do with it if that's what it's got to be about. And,
we've both been to youth camp as sponsors and ministers, and arguing with youth about faith doesn't seem to really be helpful.
Nor adults, you know, like. No.
Well, as it turns out, right, not adults either.
I mean, really about anything, but so it was over the years, and really was a couple people I met later on who. And, you know, we grew up Roman Catholic, right? So, you know, and my parents were hippies. You know, my parents found weed in the marijuana in the washer when we were growing up, and they couldn't punish me or my brothers because they're like, well, is this yours or is this one of the boys, you know? And so we kind of grew up in a family that was kind of a little bit, you know, pushing the envelope a little bit, maybe. Where was I going? Oh, well, you know, it was later in life I kind of met these pastors who were, first of all, probably really good writers, and not like not like rhetorical arguments, but like they would write poetry or short stories or, or I can remember going to Day Spring Baptist Church and the pastor got up there and instead of giving a sermon, he sat down on the front step and read a children's book. Mm. And I was like, I don't know what this is, but that was kind of cool. it was kind of little moments like that. So it was like these pastors who, you know, didn't just have cheesy one-liners and wore pressed pants, but they smoked cigarettes and drank bourbon. And not that those things really matter, but like there was like part of that just spoke to me like when you've met someone who has seen the throes of alcoholism, right? And they've come through and they've gotten a chip and they've experienced sobriety. And not to, I mean, I don't want to like idolize alcoholism, but it's like because you've seen somebody who has hit rock bottom and also like figured out like how to live on the other side of that. So it's like when you meet someone, you know, who has done that, maybe just on a spiritual sense, maybe not on the substance sense, but like that sort of stuff, like, whoa, that kind of like wowed me a little bit, you know? And, you know, when the point of the community became a little bit more about, you know, just more, even more simple sort of justice things like feeding our neighbors and serving the poor, because those are real simple, right? But like, not even addressing like the systemic issues of poverty, but like just like leaning into poverty, anti-poverty or anti-hunger as part of faith practice, not like as an extra nice thing to do, but like when that became part of the faith practice, those are the things that just kind of like moved me.
So how do you connect that with a ministry of presence?
Yeah. You know, showing up is a majority of the battle, you know, just showing up. And, you know, our culture is, and understandably, but our culture, you know, really wants to maximize efficiencies. Mm-hmm. And it's like, ministry so often just seems like just show up, stand there, don't say anything, and that's all you need to do. And it's the least efficient thing you could possibly do. Take someone to a 2-hour lunch and you just sit there and you don't say a thing at lunch, hardly, other than what you want to eat. And then at the end of the lunch, this person looks at you and says, oh my gosh, thank you, you have been so helpful. And I'm thinking, I have not said a thing.
So why do you think that is, that what you say is less important than the presence that you have?
Because I don't have the answers, right? Yeah. I don't have the answers. I don't own the spirit. I don't own truth. You know, I think I believe all that is within you or within everyone, you know. And so to be present is to say, you know, because so much of advice says, I have the answer if you'll just do what I say.
Right.
of religion says if you'll follow these steps, right? Or at least bad religion. This ministry of presence is like, no, you have everything you need. You know, I validate you in your struggle just by sitting here. It would be violence to our relationship to assume that I understand the gravity of what you're experiencing and that I could provide steps that help get you out of this mess.
Do you find that at times you're tempted to do that?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Cause I certainly did. It's like, boy, if you could just do, you know, in my head is if you could just do X, Y, or Z, your life would be so much more satisfying. But you can't do that.
And sometimes there's people, right? There's other people who say, I want you to tell me what to do.
Sure.
And, you know, done very carefully, you can say, well, you know, I can wade into this and talk about it, but, you know, you need to know, like, I don't know. I don't have the answers for you, you know? Sometimes even we're dealing with a person who needs to make the decision for themselves. Mm-hmm. And we've just enabled sort of a lifetime of, you know, like in endorphin hits by, mm-hmm. you know, you just do what the leader, religious or otherwise, says, and then you kind of get this endorphin hit in your brain. You're like, all right, yeah, you, so it's just like do the steps that they say to do, and like you never really become like this self-directed yeah. or self-aware. So
Well, so let me shift a little bit here. How did you wind up in Lubbock?
We drove ultimately. Yeah, that's a good question. We were in Richmond for 7 years and having a pretty good time and really enjoyed that city and made deep mm-hmm. friendships and enjoyed a lot of the work with the church. We kind of got into this place where like we're kind of at the end of one project with the church and about to start another, and the church had kind of made a couple moves over the years that made us feel like the big tent was narrowing with respect to theology. And we knew going in that maybe we were on maybe one end of the spectrum, but
yeah.
it's kind of like, first of all, it seemed like my supervisor really liked the fact that we were on one end of the spectrum, even though he couldn't quite get there himself, you know?
Yeah.
But over the years, sort of the community, maybe we felt at least made some shifts, and we kind of felt released in the sense that, like, we don't know that we can be really very helpful if that's kind of like some of the values of the community. So we were paying a lot of money, probably similar to Austin, not quite as crazy as Austin, but we were paying a lot of money to live in a really small house that right. we loved. And we had a child, we had two bedrooms and one bath. And then we had a child, and like all this plastic stuff was like taking over our home. And
is all that plastic stuff what other people might call toys?
Yeah, so it's like a never ending glacier. It was like, you know, we loved that little neighborhood and we loved the, you know, friends and, we were just kind of like in a lot of transition, and a friend called and said, hey, I've given your name to this church in Lubbock. And he had done this before, and I didn't really pay much attention. He said, listen, I actually want you to pay attention to this one. And yeah. so when he said that, I was like, you know what? It kind of like lines up on a couple of levels. So, they took a risk on us, and we feel like we took a risk on coming here too. But I think it's been just 2 years, but it's been pretty beautiful and fun. And, you know, we're learning a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good. Good. How have things changed during this pandemic? What's life like in Lubbock? I mean, I know what it's like here in Austin, and we've had hot spots in different times and so on. So what's going on in Lubbock?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, Texas Tech is one of the bigger public universities to say, hey, we're going to have classes in person in fall. Mm-hmm. And I don't need to cast judgment on, you know, whether or not that was a good or bad decision, but I think it's indicative of kind of sort of the mentality here in the city kind of keep going as usual and take risk as you want to take risks and, mm-hmm. you know, wear your mask if you'd like. our church was probably the first church in Lubbock to, stop meeting in person. Mm-hmm. And then others followed the following week, but, we kind of felt like maybe we're a little bit, out there alone, at least for one Sunday. Yeah. And you know, that was a little bit of
so what was your first Sunday to not meet?
I can't remember, like March 8 maybe. And then I think there's a lot of division in Lubbock about this. you know, and there is around the world, but it seems sure. like, you know, it seems like there's you know, to wear a mask is divisive, unfortunately, to not put your kids in school is, you know, maybe seen as an overreaction. Mm-hmm. To, you know, halt in-person worship services, I think has become to be seen as an overreaction. And, mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, there's a lot we don't know. And also, you know, I find myself thinking like, we're not trying to make winners and losers here. You know, we're not trying to be right and wrong. We're, you know, what is the most caring thing we can do? And, you know, it's been, I think it's been difficult. It's been difficult yeah. for me. It's been difficult on our family. We feel like our relationships have suffered. Our, certainly, you know, by protecting our physical health, we also feel like our mental health is not in the best place it's ever been, you know? And right. it's like, whoa, you know, let's watch another movie together as a family.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But
so are you, is Second Lubbock meeting in person now?
We're about to. And
what's that going to look like?
Yeah, I mean, all the, you know, safe distancing and social, all that sort of social distancing. And
are you going to ask people in attendance to wear masks?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, mask won't be, I don't think that'll be a problem at all. People wear masks, will wear masks inside. I think, I do think I don't think we'll see many people come. We've done a survey
Yeah,
not many want to come, but you know, by being available, it will be available for those who do want to come, and so that's where we're at.
Yeah, have you had much conflict within your congregation about this decision?
Well, unlike other churches, we already have a fair amount of division in our church.
Sorry.
No. I mean, I think on a healthy level. I mean, like
the world
is divided, right? Politically divided, you know, socially divided. We're not very racially divided as a church, but we probably are divided as a church how to respond to racial injustices, you know, particularly on a systemic level in our country and so forth. So you know, it's like anything else. You know, people are passionate about X, and people are passionate about Y, and there are people who are indifferent about Z, and mm-hmm. You know, I have found myself feeling like if there was one right answer, we would have done it. But you know, generally speaking, I feel like churches don't always do bad things, but churches do often things badly. And so, you know, whatever we do, if we can just try to do it with as much grace as possible, that will at least be helpful.
Yeah, yeah.
But yes, well, go ahead.
Let me ask you, I'm making a connection here, and you can tell me if I'm on the right track or not. Because I you know, heard you explaining the conflict in your parents' divorce and that it was a very difficult and conflictual situation. You had different influences religiously growing up, and you're in a church that does have a wide variety of opinion, beliefs, and expressions. And do you feel like there's a connection there, that you found yourself pastoring a church that is navigating that kind of thing? And
are you reading my mail?
No, I'm not. just wondering. How does that childhood play into the way you pastor?
Yeah, I avoid conflict, right?
Do you?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Sometimes that has benefited me greatly, and other times that has not been so great. So, yeah, I try, you know, I'm constantly trying to negotiate a compromise, and, you know, sometimes compromise isn't good, you know, like if you want Italian food and I want Mexican food, a compromise would be like Italian-Mexican food, right? But yeah. like that might not be the best fusion, right? So sometimes it's good to right. say, I want to eat Italian food because you want Italian food.
Right.
Although I'm a little bit more particular to like Thai and Indian food myself personally, but no,
again, another not so great fusion.
yeah.
That's a good way of expressing it. Sometimes you actually just have to choose a path.
Mm-hmm.
And go with that.
Yeah, definitely. And
how does your congregation respond to a message like that? That sometimes you just have to choose.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I think there certainly is like, and this isn't just our congregation, you know, and particularly because I've only been here 2 years,
mm-hmm.
but there certainly is a sentiment, at least in my experience in the church, where we want the pastor to be a strong leader, and a strong leader is quote unquote a strong decision maker. Okay. And, you know, I don't think those are qualities that at least are my instinctual go-to. Like I'm not like a naturally strong decision maker. You know, I do feel like it, you know, and for me, like theologically over the years, I've come to like celebrate that, you know, I feel like, okay, well, I'm more contemplative. I enjoy the mysticism. I enjoy the listening and the slow, you know, but certainly I think there's some notes in our world of, okay, we'll be a strong leader. Okay. You know, all that stuff is cute and all, but, you know, lead the church. And I don't think that I am in a unique position at all. In fact, you know, I think I've read some things that other, you know, pastors have written, published, and, you know, just online newspapers or whatever about, like, you know, a lot of churches are looking to pastors right now to be experts on pandemics. And I'm not,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I'm not an expert on public health. And so, you know, all the more reason maybe to help make sure we get people, you know, discerning together and deciding together. But
mm-hmm.
I do think in a sort of, you know, we're a professional church. We've got, a lot of, like, achieving people with PhDs and, you know, corporations and, you know, and have wonderful gifts and probably we are a church that has a lot of strong decision makers. And I think not just here in Lubbock, but also in Richmond, I think my propensity to kind of like go slow, you know, has provided some friction.
Okay. Well, I would think in this pandemic and not meeting in person and so on, that the going slow gift would be actually a gift to the congregation and maybe something valued. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, no, certainly. Yeah, I think certainly, you know, there are certainly times where that, like, you know, less anxious presence is helpful, particularly in times of great disruption, anxiety, so on and so forth. But also,
mm-hmm.
there are times where, you know, someone can think, well, why aren't you anxious about this?
Yeah.
You know, why aren't you anxious about the people leaving the church and never coming back? Why aren't you anxious about money leaving the church and never coming back? Why aren't you anxious about all the unknowns, you know? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of unknowns, aren't there? So, you know, I think that has been, you know, I still have a whole lot of work to do on that regard and like how to be true to me and yet also, you know, serve the situation better.
Right. Respond to other people's anxieties.
Yeah.
So, well, that does raise a question. What makes you anxious?
What makes me anxious? So probably like being held to expectations that I didn't previously agree upon.
Ah, and that never happens to ministers.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest thing is, I think I'm okay with expectations that are reasonable and agreed upon.
But right.
Like, and this is with respect to the church and with respect to just life, right? You know, like, but it's knowing those other expectations are out there, and I'm like, oh, I don't want to be judged against that, because like I already knew, like, that's not my thing, you know. You know, a lot of, for example, here's an example. A lot of, there's a lot of folks who are about my age, youngerish pastors, who are called by churches, who are older churches like our church is. And I think either, you know, implicitly or explicitly, you know, consciously or unconsciously, the church is like, oh, you're young, you'll bring all the young people too.
Right.
Ooh, I don't know about that. You know, that's hard. I don't know that that's me, you know. And, you know, and, you know, going back to families, like, both my brothers walked away from the church. I'm not trying to, like, get them back inside the church. Like, what? Why would I try to get your children back inside the church?
You know? Right, right. Because,
I can't do that. And so, you know, or just anytime, you know, a church might call someone new or try something new, you know, there's like, maybe, well, this will grow the church, you know. And I think church growth is a good thing, you know, but it's like, it's how do we measure church growth, or you know, that sort of thing. I'm like, hey, you know, let's talk about what are the expectations here.
Sure. Yeah. Well, how do you think the pandemic is changing your church? Are there new challenges and new paths you have to pursue, anything like that?
Yeah, we will do more. You know, I'm a bit of a dinosaur when it comes to technology. I know just enough to mess your computer up, but I always know who to call, right? So call this person. We were, you know, behind the curve, decidedly, probably, with our technology. And we're also an older church, so it really wasn't much of a consequence for us to be, you know. However, I think we will continue to do distance online offerings for the foreseeable future. You know, not because we're able to produce anything better than, you know, some, you know, the work of the people, or, you know, some incredible organizations who produce wonderful online digital material. But we have, unlike, you know, a distant organization, we have relationships with people. And so when I Zoom with them, or when, you know, people from our community Zoom with them, you know, or whatever, that's sort of like, there's that ministry of presence, right? That you can't get just watching some stranger. So I do think that'll be part of our, learning going forward. And I think, you know, I still don't know, again, I'm not an expert on this virus, but I still think we have a whole lot to learn about it and its long-term impacts. And so I think whether it's respect to this virus or other viruses or other health concerns, I think we will see the church, this church at least, if not the global church, sort of up its consciousness with respect to public health, right? You know, I could be wrong there, but I think, you know, not just around the communion table, but like, what are the things that we do to say, hey, I value you as a person and in your health and your well-being? You know, again, particularly in a church with older folks who, who could really be hurt by something.
How do you balance that need for community versus the need for safety? It seems to be the big question, not just in churches, but in schools and just in life, and having, you know, outlets with friends and and you mentioned mental health earlier. Can you say more about that and the struggles there?
So with respect to mental health, I think You know, Alice and I are both trying to, you know, do things to take care of ourselves, body, mind, soul, and spirit. And I think some of the body and soul we're able to sort of maintain, you know, we both like to like run and ride bikes and that sort of stuff. And, and that, you know, real social distance friendly, you know, going for walks and hikes and that sort of thing is you know, to be outside and to get that, you know, dopamine and endorphin and vitamin D and all that sort of stuff is, you know, really helpful. And that stuff is helpful for your mental health too. But, you know, some of the things that, some of the things that give joy, I think are missing. You know, my wife is a chef. She is an artist in the kitchen, and she hasn't been in the grocery store for, I mean, how many months has it been? And, I mean, she goes in with a plan, certainly, you know, and she uses way too many ingredients for one dish, you know, but, it's a creative outlet. And so now that creative outlet is shifted to buying your groceries online. You know, and you don't get to put your hand on the green pepper in the store, you know, and we just know, I mean, scientifically, we know like how good that is for you to put your hands on the green pepper, you know, whatever it is. And so I think there's some things that, that really produce some joy in our lives that are missing. And I think social interaction is a big one too. It's like, you know, they've got the group meetings with our friends and various applications, but those have their limitations as well. And so I think we haven't been seeing friends. We've had a baby, and grandparents still haven't come to see the baby because of, you know, just being careful. And so I think, you know, compounded over the course of X number of months, it's like, you know, we find ourselves asking sometimes, like, when does our mental well-being, our mental health, sort of infringe upon what comfort we have with taking a risk with respect to our physical health? And
again, that balance of trying to figure out how to stay healthy and in every way is a challenge right now. Well, congratulations on the baby. I don't think I realized that.
It's good. Thanks. Yeah, we partied last night from about 2 a.m. to 3 a.m. It was fun.
Oh, always. 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 Yeah. Well, let me ask, is there anything that I haven't asked that you think would be important for people to know about you, how you wound up in past or formative events in your life that we haven't touched on?
Oh man, that's a good question. I can't think of anything, Mary. I think it's weird, right? It's weird to be a minister. You know how weird it is. It's weird to experience a pandemic. Like, everyone knows how weird this is. And I'm, you know, fortunate to just be able to say it's weird, right? I'm not saying this is awful because I've, you know, had to bury, you know, many people close to me, that sort of thing. But, you know, I think spirituality sometimes is weird, you know, and that's okay. You know, like, there's a lot of things that are weird. And, I think that, just like being comfortable with that sometimes has just, that's been helpful to me. Like, I know it's weird. I know they make fun of us on Saturday Night Live. I watch it and laugh at it because it is funny.
We are weird.
Yeah. And also it's kind of meaningful, you know, I think there's some beauty in it. I think there's some depth to it too. So,
yeah. I have noticed over the brief time I've known you, just how seemingly comfortable you are with the moment, you know, just, being, whether it's strange, weird, unusual, anxious for other people, you just seem to be, by and large, pretty relaxed through things. How did you get there? I have that approach to life, especially to circumstances. I mean, you know, people can be going wild around you, and you're just okay, you know, it's all right.
Yeah. This may sound strange too, but like some of the things that I'm really interested in, I think help me with that maybe a little bit. And this, like, I really enjoy running. I really enjoy like surfing and snowboarding, and I really enjoy mountain biking.
There's a lot of surfing in Lubbock.
Yeah, I was about to say the surfing thing like is non-existent right now. And just to be and let the record show, I enjoy surfing and I'm awful at it.
That's okay. You
know, like wakeboarding and things like that. You know, hiking. I enjoy like outdoors sort of things.
Yeah.
And there's something about, I think, just the moment when you're outdoors. Like sometimes I'll listen to podcasts or sermons when I'm, you know, biking or running, but for the most part, I just prefer just to not listen to music, not do, just kind of just, you know,
quiet.
Quiet. And, you know, you get up there to even if it's just a small hill that you've summited and you're like, all right, yeah, this is cool. This is it. This is the spot for today. You know, I was talking to our friend Kendall, Rothus, a couple weeks ago, and she told a story, and I'll tell you this story. Do we have time, or am I?
We do. Yeah.
So she was telling me this story. She was talking about, we went to seminary together at Truett, and okay. She was talking about, you know, she is probably one of the best preachers, speakers, orators that I know personally. You know, maybe in history there are some that are better, but few, right? So she's talking about this time that she and I are together, we're in the same classes together at Truett, and she's talking about how she thought, you know, oh my gosh, it was so cool that there was one woman who spoke at chapel in the whole year that we were there one year. Then, you know, the next year she was like pushing for more, you know, and maybe there was like 1.5 women who spoke at, you know, and 2.3 dogs or whatever that spoke. And then she talked about, you know, leaving seminary and going on to be a pastor and like trying to encourage the seminary and like, hey, here's names of incredible women who are just gifted speakers, teachers, thinkers, writers, whatever, you know, and not only hear their names, but here's their email address and their phone number and their social security number and their bankruptcy number and all that. And she was just talking about like how over the years it was just such a struggle, right? It was such a struggle. And she's been working for this. And obviously you probably just did that incredible conference. Was it last week, you know, that she and Natalie and others have put on, and probably you were probably there from the beginning too. Sorry. But, she was telling that story. And I said to her, you know, Kendall, you and I were in the same classes. And I also thought, wow, that was great. We had one woman, preach in chapel this year. And at the end of that conversation, Kendall, right, and this is my privilege, right? So I have such, I'm a young white male, right? So I have such privilege. And at the end of that conversation in class where we're talking about the one woman who came and spoke, I'm thinking, how can I go squeeze a mountain bike ride in before I have to go to work? And Kendall, you know, not being just privileged with the same sort of posture in the world that I've just been given, she's leaving that class thinking, how can we get two speakers here next year?
Yeah.
And so at all, you know, I do say like, hey, I enjoy running, I enjoy biking, I enjoy doing these things. I also am kind of learning, you know, like how much privilege there is there too. And, and I told Kendall, I'm so thankful you told that story because it's just another little point of learning for me. And I was like, wow, wow. You know, I was present for the conversation, participating in class. I do my homework, but it was like, boom, class is over. See what else I can like squeeze in to. And I'm just mindful that, you know, our brothers and sisters who are black and brown and our brothers, you know, our sisters who just don't have the same privilege as I do. They may not be able to have such an opportunity to squeeze in, you know, whatever before they have to go to work. You know?
And, what they're squeezing in is, how do I move the bar. How do I change the conversation so that we're not talking about how great it is to have one, but maybe 10.
Right. You know? Yeah. Or, you know, I'm, let's be honest, I'm going mountain biking, then I'm going to a job that pays pretty well afterwards. Whereas maybe our brothers and sisters who are black and brown, or our sisters, they're going to other jobs that don't pay as well, because I've been given a job that pays well. And, you know, so I think, although those are spiritual things for me, I also try to like be grateful for those opportunities, because it's I've certainly been given a lot that I didn't earn or deserve, you know.
Yeah. Well, from what I know about you, I suspect you use that opportunity well.
Well, thanks, Mary. That's kind.
Well, I appreciate you being here very much.
And hey, thanks. I'm glad to see you.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording part now.